This is an interview with Louise Larson, taking place at 1205 Grand Street on August 28, 1979. Okay, Mrs. Larson, last time we didn't touch upon the fact that you work for the LA Daily News. When did you work for the LA Daily News?
Well, I started about 1941 or 1942. And Madam Chiang Kai-shek came to Los Angeles, and I was hired to cover her while she was here. I was supposed to cover all the events from the beginning to the end, and Hollywood Bowl, and I remember at the Ambassador Hotel, I think she was staying, and I just followed her around, and. They hired me because I was Chinese. At first, they started using my Chinese name on my stories, Tom Law Lam.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decided not to. They decided to use my Louise Leon.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the reason they hired me was because I was Chinese and because Madam was Chinese. Maybe they thought I could speak Chinese too, I don't know.
Did you have the job after the
after she left, they offered me the job, then, because they thought I'd done well and they wanted me to stay. In fact, they said that the managing editor was Lee Payne at the time, and he said he was really happy about what I'd done. He said, especially because he said the Times and the Examiner were wishing that they had hired me. He said they had gotten something, the managing editor had gotten in touch with him. Oh, you really did pull off something there. We wish we had done that. So they hired me to work at the Daily News as a regular reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And I did general assignments. I didn't have a beat, which I liked much better than a beat. So I stayed there for about until 1945 when my daughter was born. But that was down on the office there. It was a 24-hour newspaper, and we would have different shifts. Sometimes you'd go from a regular shift from 9 until 5, another time from noon until 8, and sometimes even later, sometimes until midnight. You'd work until midnight. You know, they had 24-hour newspapers, so they had to have
mm-hmm.
people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I lived at Pico Street then, 1619 West Pico Street, so it was easy to get to the Daily News. Just took the P car and just got right off. It took about 10 minutes.
Where was the Daily News office?
That was on, let me see. I can't remember. It was on Pico and... Los Angeles Street, Los Angeles Street near, I remember that I would get off around, I can't really remember,
it's
but
okay.
It was only a few,
mm-hmm.
just a short ride,
mm-hmm.
I can't remember that,
mm-hmm.
it was down on Los Angeles Street somewhere,
mm-hmm.
a really broken down office, you know,
yeah.
how it is on Los Angeles Street.
Mm-hmm. Were there other Chinese working at the Daily News?
No, I was the only Chinese. In fact, I was the only Chinese working in the newspaper in Los Angeles at that time, I think. And maybe there was a guy on the Herald for a while. Yes, I think there was a man that worked on the Herald, a Chinese fellow that worked on the Herald. I can't remember his name. I was going to copy this. But I don't know if that was when I was on the Daily News or when later on when I was at the Outlook.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no one else at the Daily News,
mm-hmm.
no other Chinese at the Daily News. But I enjoyed that job really well. I liked that.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember roughly what the wages were for being a reporter?
Oh, at that time I think it was very low, about $40 a week. You know, very low. I guess it was more than that. It was about $45 a week, something like that.
Mm-hmm. But so as far as covering your expenses, you didn't have to pay rent because you were staying at Pico.
Well, I paid my mother something because at that time my father had died. And after my father died, they really had a hard, hard time because he had left no insurance and just there was no money. In fact, they were really strapped for a while. But that, at the time I was working, they were in better shape then because my brothers were older and they were able to work. But right after my father died, they were really having a hard time. It was in the depths of the Depression, you know,
mm-hmm.
1931.
Mm-hmm.
So I paid my mother something, mm-hmm. you know, for my room. Although I didn't pay like you'd have to pay for if you were living alone, you know.
Right. So with $45 a week, that would be $180 a month. Was there any money left over to save back in those
days?
Yes,
there was, because things were cheaper, and things were so cheap you could get spinach 5 cents a bunch, and everything was cheaper, so that even though you made so little, you still had. In fact, when I was living at home and I didn't pay anything at all. When I was making $20 a week, I just kept it all for myself. But no, things were much cheaper at that time, so there wasn't the inflated prices. Now you couldn't live on that money,
mm-hmm.
of course.
Do you think about half of your money was saved?
Oh, I didn't save that much, but I was always very thrifty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was really, cheap. I was, you know, I didn't splurge on anything, actually, and buy a lot of clothes. I didn't care much about buying a lot of clothes. So, I was able to save money.
Mm-hmm. Did you save money in a bank or just at
home?
Oh,
in a bank.
Mm-hmm. Did your parents?
I think at that time, were there savings bonds? I think they took out savings bonds for my salary. If you wanted to, you could join a savings bonds program.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did that at the Daily News, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how I saved money, through saving U.S. savings bonds. Yeah.
Did your father use a bank for saving his money?
Yes, he used a bank. Oh, yes. He believed in banks.
Mm-hmm. Do you think many Chinese back in those days put
some
their money
afraid.
In bank, or were
some
they afraid?
Were afraid
or?
I think some were afraid. I don't know, really. But I know my dad did. I mean, he always used a bank, although he didn't believe in credit. He didn't believe in, you know, getting into debt. So he paid cash for everything. He paid cash for his house. Our home of 1619
mm-hmm.
was a 15-room house, 3-story house with a roof garden and a basement. And he only paid $30,000,
mm-hmm.
and that was in 1914.
Mm-hmm.
So you see what the prices were like. And I happened to found some of the bills, and
mm-hmm.
I'm just amazed. The furniture, he got it at Barker Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And the dining room chairs, which I still have some of them,
mm-hmm.
they're still good enough to, you know,
mm-hmm.
after all this time, $2 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And the dresser that we had for our bedroom, my older sister and I, we wanted this, what they call this pine, not knotty pine, but some, I can't think of that name now. Anyway, special kind of
mm-hmm.
bird's eye, not bird's eye maple either. Oh gosh, I can't think of
that. That's
all
right.
Anyway, this dresser was only $38.
Mm-hmm.
And things were very cheap, you know,
mm-hmm.
really cheap. And he bought the furnishings, the land, and the house, $30,000, and he paid cash.
Mm-hmm.
So, he believed in paying cash for things. He used to say, I remember him saying, that someday America is really going to go broke because he didn't believe in all. He saw people buying things on credit then,
mm-hmm.
even then, that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't believe in it. He said, that's a bad thing to do. You do that and you're just going to go broke someday, and that's what's going to happen to America.
Mm-hmm.
I remember him saying that.
Mm-hmm.
But he put his money, I know he put his money in the bank.
Why do you think some Chinese were afraid to put their money in the bank?
Well, I guess they just didn't trust. I guess they just wanted to have it right there, you know, in their sock or someplace.
Do you think it was because they didn't, were the ones who were afraid of the banks the ones who didn't speak English?
Yeah, that's probably true. They didn't understand, and they didn't understand what the bank did. Maybe they couldn't get it out again, perhaps. I really don't know, because I don't know anybody who didn't. We didn't know anybody who didn't put their money in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that.
Hello.
Can you tell me more about your place on Pico Street?
Yes, the place on Pico Street. We moved there about 1914. I think it was January 1st, the very first day of the year. And before that, we'd been planning this house, and my father had an architect, and he would come. The architect would come to the house, and in the evening, and we'd sit with my father and talk about the plans, and my sister and I would listen, and oh, it was very exciting. And then we would go and look at the new houses that was being built, and this was a Pico and Union, the new house.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived at that time on 9th and Olive Street. So 9th and Olive Street at that time was the residential also, even though now it's downtown Los Angeles, but a lot of old Victorian houses there. And we felt like we were, when we moved to 1619, it was like going into the country, you know,
mm-hmm.
although that's now Pico and Union, a ghetto area.
Mm-hmm.
And we would take the P car sometimes on Sundays. Even my mother would go. She didn't go very often, but sometimes she would go. Get on the P car and get off the Pico and Union and look at the, go up and see how the new house was coming. It was really exciting, you know, to see it coming along.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we finally, the day came and my sister and I got to see the room where we were going to have. We had talked about this room that we wanted, and it overlooked the garden and in the back. It overlooked the back garden.
How big was this house?
It was 15 rooms and 3 stories. And I had a roof garden and a basement, so it was a large house.
Mm-hmm.
And the lot, I don't know exactly what the size of the lot was, but there was room for, and my father had loved flowers, and he had a very nice garden in the back, you know, where it was all, there was a fountain and a sort of a summer house in the back. And he took care, he never did any of the work himself, but he had my brothers, especially my one brother, who turned out to be a really wonderful in flowers. He just loved anything about flowers. Even as a child, he would, William, that was the one,
mm-hmm.
he's dead now, he died. But he was the one that would, when he was a child, if we got, earned 10 or 15 cents, he'd go buy seeds and plant flowers. But my father was always, on Chinese New Year's, we would have these Chinese lilies, and he would put them in the blue pots. I remember they were beautiful blue ceramic pots, Chinese pots. He would put the bulbs in, and on Chinese New Year's, they'd be blooming. And
mm-hmm.
then we'd have, always Chinese New Year's would be a big day, too, because then that would be, my mother would get out this octagonal lacquer dish, you know, with all the little goodies in it, all coconut, you know, that this ginger and all that. Now we have the lacy,
mm-hmm.
and made a big thing out of New Year's, and especially at 9th and Olive, my sister and I, we would get just tons of lacy. It's, you know, all the friends from Chinatown would come. They didn't come to Pico, it was too far, but all the old men from Chinatown, the friends of my father, would come. And we'd have a big straw tray, and it was just loaded with lacy by the time of evening came, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We would gumi pacho everybody that came and get them. They always, at least a dollar in there in the lacy. It wasn't just little coins.
Mm-hmm.
So
you had such a big family that you speak of.
Well, we only had, at that time, you see, it was only my sister and I that I remember when we had these really big. And then I guess my brother, too, my brother Taft, he was born 4 years after I. In fact, I think Holly, my sister Holly, she was also born at 9th and Olive. So that there were six of us born at 9th and Olive. And then when we moved to Pico Street, my two younger brothers, Monroe and Lincoln, were born there. But Pico Street became the headquarters for Chinese activities because it was, my parents were so generous and so were so glad to have young people around. So the China, when we went to USC, well, the Chinese Students Club meetings were always held there once a month at least. And then we'd have, in between, we'd have Mahjong parties all night. We'd stay up all night playing Mahjong.
The parents, would your parents
play? Oh, no, not
with
the parents. No, just
they,
my parents never played Mahjong. Never. They, you know, they thought that was, they didn't care much for Mahjong.
But they let you play.
But they didn't mind our playing. We played Mahjong, and then we, the money that we got, we played for a little money, not much. But we put that money and make a pot, and then it, after a while, there'd be enough money, we'd have a party, you know, give a party. And then we went to beach, had beach parties, and it was just, I just remember my growing up and having such a wonderful time at Pico, because it was just happy.
And you mentioned, you also mentioned that your father allowed you to invite musical groups to Pico Street to book bands to play.
Oh,
while
yes,
you had
yes,
dance,
when
dances
we had
there.
Dances, why he would, we would hire, he would allow us to hire a band, you know, to play them, so we had to have live music. And they, usually they'd come at 8 o'clock, and nobody, you know how young people be very shy, nobody wants to start dancing, and oh my gosh, we got this band here, and nobody's playing, nobody would start. But pretty soon some, you know, some bold person would get up and start dancing, and and we would move all of the, we'd move the, in the daytime, during the day, we'd prepare for this dance, it would take us all day, my sister and I, we'd roll up the carpets and move the table out to the front porch, and that's where we'd serve the punch, and make the sandwiches or whatever, the punch, and get everything ready. And then at 8 o'clock, around 8 o'clock, our party would start, and they would. And my dad would say, "Well, we could just have the band until midnight." So when midnight came, by that, of course, by that time everybody was just going full speed ahead. You know, they wanted to keep on going. So we'd always inveigle my dad to hire them for one more hour, so they stayed till 1 o'clock, and he would do it. And he was. In fact, he'd come down and dance, and one time he put on his tuxedo, and we were so embarrassed, we didn't we didn't want him to be do that, you know. And he thought that he should dress the part, so he put on his tuxedo and come down and dance with the girls and dance with me.
And how were you dressed?
Well, we always had party dresses, you know. We bought them and we made them. We always had party dresses, so we didn't ever want to wear the same dress twice, you know. And then we would have, the students were always welcome, even dinner time, you know. We'd always have a student there, usually. Some student would come and just drop in, and they were always welcome to stay. So it was really a very fun time. In fact, as I say, some people that I meet now that are as old as I am and that I haven't seen for 30 or 40 years, they'll say, "Oh, I still remember the good times we had at 1619. We all called it 1619. And then after my father died, things really got really bad. Things were, because he had no insurance, and I guess my brother had to go to work at doing housework, or I mean, what would you call it, janitor work at a had an apartment house.
Mm-hmm.
Bryson Apartments, I think it still exists.
Mm-hmm.
And,
which brother was this?
That was William, the one that just saved our lives all the time. He was the second son under Taft. And he would just do anything, you know, to help out. He'd go out and do anything. And then my Holly, she went to work there too at that same apartment house, and she thought she was supposed to get $25 a week, and she was supposed to take care of three kids, and instead she found out it was only $25 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother made her quit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was working from, she'd start working at 7 in the morning and work all day till about 7 at night. You know, it was just slave work, really slave labor.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother made her quit that job.
Mm-hmm.
And they even used to, at home they would even, there was a piecework at home that you could get almond, cracked walnuts,
mm-hmm.
shell
mm-hmm.
walnuts. They
mm-hmm.
even did that for a while. You know, there were just tons of walnuts to shell, try to get a little money.
Why was it so difficult after your father died?
Because there was no money.
That you had, was it medical bills?
Well, no, not that, but there was no money coming in.
Mm-hmm.
See, my father had been the herbalist, and my mother, my older brother Taft, he tried to take over, but he didn't know anything about herbs. And my mother would coach him and try to help him, you know. She knew something about it. Somehow she knew, she had picked up something about herbs.
Didn't your father have
he had no
a druggist?
Oh yes, he had a
also
drug.
And also sort of an office helper.
Oh yes, he had all that. He had all that.
But they couldn't continue
that.
Oh no.
In fact, he was sick for about 2 years before he died, and he got, and I guess the business kept getting worse and worse and worse. And I would even send them money. I was working in Chicago then,
mm-hmm.
and I would send them some money too now. But afterwards, then things got a little better, and my brothers Monroe and Howard brought they got married and brought their wives to live at Pico, and then a Taft also was married and had his wife, so there were three families living there.
Mm-hmm.
Three, you know, it was just like
mm-hmm.
a Chinese
mm-hmm.
Chinese compound,
right.
You know. and that went on for several years. I don't know how well they all got along together,
mm-hmm.
but pretty well, I guess. And my mother was the matriarch, of course. She was still at home. And then she had a stroke about, well, when was that? I forget. Oh, before that, I'm going way ahead of myself. Before that, during the war,
mm-hmm.
my brothers all went to war except Taft. Every one of them had to go
mm-hmm.
into the service when they were drafted. And William, the one that, my favorite brother, the one that died, he went through about five campaigns, terrible, from the Aleutians to the Pacific, really awful campaigns. We didn't really know what happened, you know, until afterwards. He couldn't write and tell us about it, but he was the one that really went through the war. And Howard had to go to Italy. He went to Italy. And Monroe, he had the easiest. He got to play in the band. He didn't even have to leave the States.
What did he play?
He plays the drums. He's a drummer.
Uh-huh.
He was a drummer. And Lincoln, my younger brother, he always manages to get himself something good. He's the one that's got the condo in Honolulu now and the property here in Hollywood. He always was able to manage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good businessman. In fact,
mm-hmm.
he in Chinatown way, when we were having such hard times, he was the only one that could make any money in Chinatown. He'd go into Chinatown and sell tea, and he made money writing people's names, Chinese names on chopsticks. That was really a good, you know, that was, he made a lot of money doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a bit of money, that was, you know. And poor Wum, William, we used to call him Wum, he'd try to sell tea and stuff like that, but he just, he was not a salesman, you
uh-huh.
know. But Lincoln, my brother, he can talk fast and he can He knows. He has that kind of know-how. So he was always been able to make money. He's the only one that's ever made any money in our family.
Mm-hmm.
But he got himself a, he went to war too, but he was became a major. He went to China.
Mm-hmm.
He went to China once during the war. And he was in Honolulu during Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
He was with IBM at that time. And then he, I guess he became, well, he went into, I don't know how he started, as a lieutenant in the not the Navy, but what is it, the other? The Marine Corps,
Marine.
Of all things, he was in the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother had all these, you know, it was a terrible worry for her, having all these sons of hers in the Army. But she never cried, she never broke down until my nephew, her grandson,
mm-hmm.
that was Lily's, my sister Lily's son,
mm-hmm.
when he had to go. That was the first time I saw her cry. She cried then, you know,
mm-hmm.
the fact that her grandson had to go. And that was sad because while young Peter was overseas, his father died. He died. He was only 45 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one that started Chinatown. And Peter Suhu.
Peter Suhu.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one that started Chinatown. And it was really, it was so sudden. It was a terrible shock. You know, we had our house for dinner and then went home and had a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And died the next day.
How
so
did Taft manage to get out of there?
Well, Taft, I guess being the only, I guess they allowed you to have one son at home. And so they allowed him to. And he was supposed to be carrying on the family business, which wasn't very much business, you know, because he didn't know anything about herbs.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kept up the mail order, because my dad had the mail order patients in Canada. They kept on with those. Those patients kept with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he got many new patients, because he didn't know that much about medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So. Well, then he went into accounting, so he's an accountant. Taft is an accountant. I guess he still does it, more
mm-hmm.
or less, although he's retired.
Mm-hmm. So when did the 1619 PICO actually break up?
When my brother William came home from the war, I remember how happy we all were to see him alive, you know, because he'd been through all these horrible experiences. He even had some Japanese dishes that he got, you know, some Japanese prisoner, he got some Japanese dishes. We had those.
Excuse me. Okay.
Okay. So when he came home, He didn't know whether he wanted, he was trying to decide what to do. He wanted very much to open a nursery. He talked about it with me because he loved flowers. He was the one that loved flowers. So, And he thought about that, but then he thought, well, that was such a risk, and he's not a good businessman, you know. He was afraid to take the responsibility of opening a business of his own, although he wanted to very much. I kind of wish he had. Instead, he went into the post office, postal service, which is safe, you know, something secure.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that, too, because I like to be secure and have, you know, he wanted to have a certain salary coming in and knowing what he was going to do. So he had this GI Bill, you know, to get a house. So he bought land and built a house on 101st Street. I think it was only $7,000, a great big lot, and a very nice house
mm-hmm.
that he had built. He didn't build it himself, but he had it built. And he furnished it. Just, he had such good taste in furnishings, you know, he furnished it beautifully. And the garden, he had the most beautiful garden. It was just like a park. But, you know, it was his garden. His house, of course, stood out. His house was the best house on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after a while, after my mother had the stroke, and William had moved out, she decided he wanted her to go live with him, because they really, you know, she he was they were very close, and he wanted her to live with him. So she went to live with him, and so she never said one thing about 16 and 19 after she moved to his house. She never mentioned it once.